A Podshape production.
Have you ever lost something? Maybe it was your keys, your mobile phone, or something more valuable. To find them, you retrace your steps. You look in all the places they're most likely to be, and sometimes you look in places where they're probably not, but just in case. Sometimes when things go missing, you blame other people. You ask them if they've put them somewhere, if they've seen them. You sometimes think the worst. Maybe they've been stolen, taken from you when you weren't looking. Some of those theories that you come up with when something goes missing are far-fetched. You blame and have unreasonable thoughts. Those themes will be explored in this podcast, but not with insignificant material things, but with a person. This is the story of Desmond Francis Carr, who was last seen at 3 p.m. on August 2, 1979, and then he disappeared.
Episode 12, 1 year later. It's been over a year since I released the last episode of this podcast, and so much has happened in our world in the past 12 months. In my world, I've started my own podcast company called Podshape, which aims to shape the world with stories like this one. You can search Podshape in your favorite podcast app. Since I started this podcast, I realized how many missing person stories there are in Australia and how little most people know about those stories. We've been busy making other podcasts about other people whose families are suffering from ambiguous loss. There's the story of Zach Barnes, an 18-year-old who went missing under mysterious circumstances 4 years ago.
I can feel him, and his heart is racing 100 miles an hour. I don't want this. I don't want to be part of it. And the guy goes, too late. You've been here. What have you done? What have you found? You've been out here with the dogs. And they're like, no, we haven't. And I said, well, someone's been here. I feel him. I smell him. And I dream about him. I have thought about this over and over and over. Like, Zach's the first thing I think of in the morning when I wake up, and he's the last thing I think of at night. For him to disappear without a trace, how does that happen?
That podcast is called What Happened to Zach, or Damien Dickey's Dad and His Son, who went missing in separate circumstances within a week of each other. It's called My Dad and Son Are Missing.
He was different, but he was a good dad. He was always just a worker. Yeah. He was a loner, but he liked his ladies. Well, I might ring the police and just get them to go and check, because a cow might have kicked him in the head. And then when I got there, I got there at 9 o'clock or roundabout. It was just something, I just didn't feel right, like when I pulled up, and straight away I could just smell like a, I don't know if it was cologne or something, but I could smell something. I knew it wasn't my dad, you know, and I was really uneasy. She hopped the fence and just started walking down towards me, and I just said, oh, who are you? And she goes, I'm Bob's wife. And this is a load of garbage, mate. He's not married.
Then his only son vanishes.
Dylan's in trouble. You have to go get him from school. It shocked her. Like, we just couldn't believe what we say. No, it was terrible. Like, he'd done stuff the week before in front of me, and I took him to mental health at Maitland, to the hospital, and I don't know why, but they let him out on the next day. I thought he was going to die then, to be honest. I did. I thought he was going to die then. He ended up stripping all his clothes off. This was in the whole street was virtually under construction, and he stripped his clothes off and ran down the street saying, I was born naked, I'm going to die naked.
Or there's the two little girls that were abducted from the Adelaide Oval in 1973.
Well, of all the baffling crimes that have been committed in this city, few are more heartbreaking than the disappearance of Kirsty Gordon and Joanne Ratcliffe.
But not having a body to bury and to actually grieve for her properly.
There are theories.
Seen in the company of a man wearing a check coat and a brimmed hat, leading them from the ground, never to be seen again.
It was a crime that one would think was a part of of child abuse type of thing, you know, the...
So do you think there could be a link between, what, pedophilia and the abduction?
Oh, absolutely.
Children?
Absolutely. No doubt about that.
Suspects.
He should probably be in a mental institution to tell you the truth rather than in prison.
The gentleman that was dressed in women's clothing was sort of loitering around where the ladies' toilets were.
Rumours.
It's child porn. How do you access that while you're in prison? And he was put on that property by government. He was sent out to there to get him away from Adelaide because he was molesting too many children.
You might remember that story, as it's the story of Susie Ratcliffe from Leave a Light On, Sister. You can search that podcast, which is called Little Lost Girls. Although the world's moving fast, in the world of my missing Uncle Des, the world has not moved as quick. You might recall in the last few episodes that a coroner's report had begun into the disappearance of my uncle. There was also DNA being taken by police for my mum and my Auntie Joy. This was to have a familiar DNA with the body that was found in Newman. Mum's dementia has progressed, and although her long-term memory is strong, her short-term memory is not very good. Over the past 12 months, I've been in regular contact with my cousin Michelle, whose mum Gwen led the search for our missing uncle before she passed. In July 2020, in the midst of COVID-19, Michelle called me to update on some information.
Hi, Jay, it's Michelle. How are you?
Oh, hi, Michelle. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Just ringing to update you on some information. Last week, Auntie Joy was listening to the radio and she heard something mentioned about an inquest, missing persons, Desmond Carr. And she only caught the end of it. It was on the ABC News, just on the radio. So she was a bit rattled by it and thought, what's going on? So she rang me and told me about it. I tried to find the broadcast and re-listen, but I couldn't find it.
Okay.
And I listened to the next lot of news. There was nothing on there.
I was lucky enough to do some digging and have a few contacts at the ABC, so I was able to track down that news report on the local ABC station that my Auntie Joy was listening to.
Police have asked the state coroner to review the cases of two missing men in the Kimberley. Desmond Carr was last seen by his Main Roads co-workers in August 1974 when they dropped him at a job south of Broome. When they came back, his steamroller was still running, but there was no trace of the 38-year-old. Rolly Nixon went missing from Fitzroy Crossing in 2018.
It's pretty amazing that at the exact moment my Auntie Joy was listening to the radio, she thought she overheard something about her missing brother. Now, you might be thinking how terrible that Des's sister heard about the coroner's report on the radio and not from police. But my cousin Michelle explained why that was the case after she rang police to inquire about the radio news report.
I decided to give a call to the coroner's office in Perth and got put through. Absolutely lovely, lovely people, very, very helpful. So got put through to a Lyle Husanak. He's the police sergeant there, and he also said there was an officer, Craig Robinson, that would also be dealing with the case. Craig gave me a call back, really lovely, lovely chap. I told him who I was, and then he just sort of said, so glad you called, that they didn't have any record of, the only person they had was Anishil Walkerton on as far as any sort of contact. On his desk, bearing in mind, he said this has all just landed on his desk, so he is quite new to it all.
Yep.
I just sort of ran through a few things to him. I dotted down a whole heap of information, just dot points on any injuries, and that sent it off to him. And he invited me in to come in and have a chat. So I spent a couple of hours in there this morning having a talk to him. Very, very helpful, very open. He's been dealing with a few of the missing person long-term cases. Felt very comfortable sitting there, which was nice.
Wow.
And wasn't rushed. He just handed me the file and just said, go through it, explained a few things in it, and just said, let me know what you think, anything you can add. He didn't have your contact details. I had given him the heads up and he did listen to the podcast.
Okay, good.
So he had listened to the podcast and he just thought it was great, but it's so good to have this avenue as well for information.
So we finally have a police officer who's working with the state coroner to prepare a report so that they can establish what happened to my uncle. Michelle's more than happy with how her time went with Senior Constable Robertson.
Where they're at, they're still probably hasn't got to the inquest stage, apparently.
Yep.
But it's landed on them to be going through.
That's fantastic news.
It still sounded like it could be a long way off.
Uh-huh.
There was also talk of that body that they found in Newman. I questioned that. And I also brought up about my concerns about that probably doing some DNA testing on either Auntie Joy or Auntie Cheryl.
Yep.
I sort of feel like that's something we should... I would feel more comfortable sitting there ready to go, if not for now, for later on.
Michelle gave me the police officer's details, so I emailed him in hope to try and get some time with him to find out the progress of my uncle's case and to see if there was anything else he could update me on. Of course, I also wanted to record this update to use it on the podcast, but as Craig explained in his email return, he's not just a police officer, he's an officer of the court, and that might undermine the authority of the coroner. We agreed to have a chat on the phone with the recording devices switched off. My chat with Officer Robinson went well. He was friendly and helpful and explained where he was at with my uncle's file. Michelle was also able to give me an update on how her initial chat with Officer Robinson went.
It was very positive today. I just sort of, and as I tried to explain to him, no, we're not after blame here. We're not after things weren't done right. I mean, 40 years ago, things were done differently to now. But we are hoping for some closures and some information. We're able to, he was very interested in any, you know, broken bones that Uncle Des had and stuff, which was great that, thankfully, Grandma, she kept all the records of everything. So we were able to confirm that he'd had a broken nose, plate in his cheek. He also just dealt with, when Uncle Des went missing, the pearl diver.
Okay.
Oh, that went missing. He's actually just dealt with that case, so he knows how things work in Broome. There seemed to be a lot of detailed information, so hopefully if you get over here any time, you would be more than welcome to go in there to have a look through the folder.
COVID-19 has put a stop to me going anywhere near WA to see those files or my parents and my brothers. But there were a few things that were interesting to me. One of those interesting points was the fact that my uncle had a broken nose and a metal plate in his head. So if there were any bones found, like the ones in Newman, then it would be an easy enough task to discount them if the two things didn't match up. The senior constable also investigated the missing pearl diver in Broome a few days after my uncle disappeared. So he had a pretty good knowledge of the area and the feeling of the town in the 70s, and also how the search went for both of those missing men.
I did walk out of there going, that was wonderful, and I put everything, I've screenshotted a few of the conversations and people, and I did let Peter Connolly and Brian Lewis know, just updated them on where we're at and just saying...
How was Peter?
There's no... Yeah, he's good, he's doing okay, and he just thanked me for letting them know, and when there is an inquest, they'd like to be there. You definitely walked out of there after talking to Craig, feeling a lot happier, that feel like something could be getting done, and just being investigated. But there was a little bit of detailed information, so you can see where the file had been accessed. So it has been ongoing. So that was good to see, that it just wasn't just put there, sort of thing. So that was good, but it wasn't a lot. But we're just going to try now and find a photo of, they wanted a photo of Uncle Des, if we could get a smiling photo.
Okay.
So Auntie Joy was going to look what she had, because most of ours, he wasn't smiling. But
why would they want a smiling photo?
I don't know. Maybe for the teeth.
Yeah, maybe.
because it was confirmed with his bottom lower teeth and everything. So that was all. I sort of made sure they knew that the teeth, just his adult teeth, never grew. He was just born with these baby teeth and they never lost them.
Yep. Okay.
But so there was, and it was good that we have actual dates of when he did have the plate or something put into his cheek from a broken cheek and a broken nose. So yeah, so that was good that only Joel was able to find that information as well.
All of these tiny details seemed important. Photographs of his smile, knowing if he had a broken bone, people he knew. It would seem the police are leaving no stone unturned to help find an answer, which I guess you would expect, but 40 years on, it's still refreshing to hear someone was as interested as we are in finding some closure. There were also a few new things that Michelle found while looking through the police file.
He sat there, he went through everything I had and said everything. Any photos and screenshots like we'd sent each other, I've put on a USB and just said, look, have this. There's some screenshots of some letters we've received. I also came across a letter from Tony Herney, with the Tony and Sue, they were good friends of Uncle Des. I think Uncle Des lived with them up there.
Okay.
And funnily enough, on one of the records I did see, it had Sue down as proposed girlfriend. I went, oh, that was actually Tony's girlfriend. So we're able to do that. But
you might remember in an earlier episode that my uncle apparently didn't have a girlfriend, so it's unlikely he'd proposed to someone. As Michelle said, it's more likely the information was taken down wrong at the time. There's also another revelation in the file, which I'm hoping to hear more about when the coroner's report is finally released. It's a conversation that happened in the late 80s at the Jingalong community, which is about 165 k's east of Newman. This conversation was with a vinyl floor layer whom my Uncle Des knew and had worked with. This bloke said that he believed my uncle was murdered by a person who'd been molesting a young girl in the area, and then when my Uncle Des found out and intervened, he was killed. There's also another man, Ron, who apparently had a beer with my uncle at the roadside where he was working the day before he disappeared. Police are speaking with Ron to see how my uncle was that day. Then there's the map and the sock. Remember the man that came to police about 10 years after the disappearance to say he thinks he saw my uncle walking by a road on the day he disappeared, and then he drew a map? Well, Michelle, my cousin, was able to see that map in the police file in person.
It was interesting actually to look at the map. I said, he's gone through a lot of trouble with you. And it sort of was interesting that what he came up with, that he felt like the search was done in the wrong place.
Who, Graham did, or the police officer?
Yeah.
Graham did. Yeah.
And he said he tried telling, at the time, the foreman and wasn't listened to. So that was interesting because it had his statement there, what he made.
What did Craig think of that information? Did he say anything about it?
Yeah, he thought it was interesting. I said, well, he said there is another map somewhere that he's still got it. He's still, as he said, he's still processing all the information and getting stuff in.
Yep.
For himself. But and it was really nice. As I left, he said, you know, actually, he goes, I really want to help your family. So he could see it meant what it meant to all of us. So that was really nice.
I wanted to speak to my Auntie Joy, who recently saw my mum for Christmas. Facebook is full of pictures with them sharing a lovely Christmas moment. They also shared another joint experience, which I wanted to find out more about.
How was it seeing Mum?
Oh, she was good. I found her really good. Yeah, a bit vague at times, but, you know, she knew me. And no, we were pleasantly surprised, but more so on the Sunday that we went down to Michelle. She was more... she was sitting down at the table when I walked in and she jumped up and she said, oh, Joy, you know, and then come over and gave me a big hug, and then I had to sit next to her and she kept moving the chair closer and closer so it couldn't be moved anymore and sat the whole time with her hand on my arm or on my thigh, and then we held hands and so it was lovely. You know,
You've done a DNA test, is that right?
Yes, yes.
How did that go?
Yeah, it was okay. I had the two policemen come up here and do it. Yeah, but, you know, I haven't heard anything back from them. So. Mm.
And I believe they did the one with Mum too, right?
Yeah, I think, I'm sure she had one, yeah. But like when I mentioned it the other day, she seemed a bit vague about it. But. Mm.
And so mm-hmm. what's the process of the DNA? What do they do?
I don't really know, to be honest. I mean, I just had a swab in my mouth, that's all. But I don't know. They said it doesn't go any further. You know, it will only be for Des's case, you know.
Because that body in Newman that was found, have they used your DNA in any way to try and establish whether that...
I don't know, Jason. I haven't heard anything back from them. Yeah, but obviously there couldn't have been anything drastic or they would have contacted me, no doubt.
So we have a few more answers, or at least we've closed off some loose ends. But now we have the story of a man who claims Des might have been murdered. And we have a few more contacts that might know something. We also have a coroner's report that's being worked on. And the moment we hear any more about this case, we'll bring it to you in the disappearance of Des. There are over 38,000 long-term missing person cases in Australia, and the story you've just heard is one of them. We want to continue to help bring these emotional stories of ambiguous loss to you so we can spread the word and hopefully get some closure for the families. For as little as the price of a coffee a month, you can help support us to keep creating this content. Just head to our Patreon page. The link is in the show notes.